Brian Boucher with us here this morning. Brian, thank you very much for doing this. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Scott. It's different times, but I'm certainly excited. It's good to be with you.
Does it feel like just yesterday? It was 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago that you made that save and you guys went on that run. Does it feel closer or further apart than that actual 10-year differential?
Yeah, you know, it feels a lot sooner than 10 years. It's amazing how fast time goes by. But there's still days in my head, some days I still feel like I play, but obviously I don't. Yeah, that was a great moment. Certainly in my top three memories of my playing career to be able to do that, especially against a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, who, you know, probably the best shootout goaltender, we've seen. But yeah, time flies.
It was such an incredible run, not only to get into the playoffs that way, but then that was the year of the upsets in the East, and you guys were a part of that as well as the seventh seed, knocking teams off all along, including the comeback from down 0-3 to the Boston Bruins. How would you compare the pressure that you felt in that final game of the season against the Rangers to backs up against the wall down 0-3 to the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, that year there was a lot of adversity in our team that year. We had a coaching change in November. John Stevens was fired. Pierre Laviolette came in. A lot of injuries. Ray Emery was supposed to be the starter for us that year, and he had that unfortunate hip injury that really derailed his career, truthfully, because he was making a comeback from Russia. We couldn't seem to get things organized, and we always did it the hard way, and we did it the hard way in game 82 to get in, and then we're down 0-3 to Boston. But it was a magical year in the sense that as things started to unfold, we caught some breaks. Montreal went on quite a run themselves. Yaroslav Halak was fantastic. He knocked out Washington and he knocked out Pittsburgh. So that was a lot of work done by Yaroslav Halak to give us an opportunity. And by the time we ended up getting Montreal in the conference final, I think they were out of gas, truthfully. I mean, they knocked off two teams that they had no business beating, and it paved the way for us to get to the Stanley Cup final. Unfortunately, we fell short in six, but certainly a year to remember for all of us.
This is certainly such a unique year because of all of the circumstances that have led us to this place where we're on the eve of NHL qualifying round hockey. There are a lot of teams, Brian, you know this, that have the, hey, why not us? This is so different. This is so weird. Why not us this year? When did you, as the Flyers in 2010, really start to feel that?
It just started to gain momentum in March. We were sputtering around in March a little bit, and we were in the playoffs, and we started to, lose our lead. And I think the Rangers made a push, as we were, in the month of March. But, I think maybe a week and a half before that, I think we finally started to get our act together. And the shootout win, no doubt, gave us a huge boost of confidence. We rode that momentum into round one against New Jersey and beat them in five. And I think right at that moment, even though we had some injuries in that Jersey series, Jeff Carter, Simone Gagné were injured in that series, we still felt like we just had something going here. And that's the beautiful thing about the playoffs is when you start to, feel the momentum going in your favor and confidence builds, you got to seize that moment and you got to ride that wave. And if you can do it and take advantage of it and get some guys to, have some extraordinary performances on your team, anything can happen. And especially right now with what we're in, this qualifying round, best of five, I think we may see a lot of that. Teams get hot quickly. They ride terrific performances, whether it be from goaltenders or, some hot hands, in the forward groups. Who knows what can happen?
No question. You can make a case for almost anything. Brian Boucher, former NHL goaltender, current analyst with the NHL on NBC. He joins us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. And I do want to get to this year's tournament in a second, but revisiting 2010 once more, we all know the old saying with pressure, it either cracks people or it makes diamonds. What was it about the makeup of that room, as you look back on it now, that allowed you guys to thrive in so many high-pressure situations?
We had some good leadership. Paul Holmgren in the you know, in the off season leading up to that year, you know, acquired Chris Pronger. And he was a great presence in the room, something that I think, you know, that Flyer locker room needed. I mean, they had some gritty, talented players, guys like Mike Richards and Jeff Carter. But those guys needed a little bit of, you know, help, a little bit of direction, a little bit of leadership. Pronger brought that. I think it allowed a guy like Kimmo Timonen, who was a great leader as well, but not quite as vocal as Prongs was, to kind of do his thing, and now he could focus on playing. And then I think it all started to fall into place. And, you know, we had some real characters on that team, guys like Scott Hartnell, who, you know, they play a playoff style type of game, but, you know, guys that are loved in the locker room. And then you get playoff performers like Danny Briere and Simone Gagné. And, you know, that's what happens. I mean, you got to add a couple of pieces when you have some talent in that room. You add a guy like Chris Pronger, you can change the whole dynamic of a room. And I think it was a great move by Paul Holmgren, and I think it was a big reason why we were able to do what we did that 2010 playoff run. We should have did it a lot easier, truthfully. We had a talented enough team. We just made it hard on ourselves throughout the whole year.
Well, and there's been countless teams like that throughout history. The 2012 LA Kings come to mind. They were an 8 seed, and when you look back now, you go, yeah, that was a really talented roster, but they'd never done it before that year, and they cemented it with that Stanley Cup run. I know no two teams are comprised equally, but as you look at this year's tournament, which under-the-radar team or teams, Brian, do you look at and you say, you know what, this is a team that has the elements. I could see them making a run this year.
Oh, man, it's such a good question. I really, because I'm doing the East, so I really, you know, I've been studying the East. And it's so hard to handicap. The one question, Scott, that I ask myself is what is going to win here? Is it going to be defense, or is it going to be skill, speed, offense that's going to win, especially early on? My gut tells me offense will be what dominates early on. But having watched the exhibition games now, I have some doubts. I have some question marks. The Islanders, they played a real organized game the other night against the New York Rangers. They're a team that when they get up on the opposition, they can really frustrate you. You know, they don't have a lot of stars. Their only game breaker really is Matthew Barzal. But if they can find that structure, they're going to be a tough team. They're going to be a frustrating team to play against. I would not pick them as a favorite, but I mean, can you not make the case that a team like that could do some damage? They could. The Columbus Blue Jackets, I mean, nobody's giving them any respect. The fact that they've got no stars on their team, they lost Bobrovsky, they lost Panarin, you know, the Zingle and Duchesne, and yet all the man games they lost to injuries this year, yet this team is businesslike around the hotel. You could see Tortorella has no interest in being buddy-buddy with anybody around here. He's totally focused. I think they're going to be a handful for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, what if they get on a roll? I know that Sergei Bobrovsky was a prize, you know, off-season addition for the Florida Panthers, but I got to be honest with you. I think Jonas Korpisalo and Elvis Merzlikins, I think these are talented goaltenders, and why can't they get hot? Why can't they get on a roll? So, I don't know, man. It's going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. I think there's going to be high drama. Every team should feel like they have an opportunity, aside from maybe one or two. I mean, I don't give the Montreal Canadiens much of a chance against Pittsburgh, so I don't count them in there. But the New York Rangers are a team that they can score goals. They got a back end that can move the puck, and they got some terrific goaltending. As an 11th seed in East, why can't they do it? You know what I mean? So, you're asking me a question that I really don't have a clear-cut answer to, but I'm talking that the Islanders, Columbus, the Rangers, who knows? These guys at the bottom could end up doing some damage in this year's playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and we're just focusing on the East right now. Brian Boucher joining us here this morning, NHL on NBC analyst, the former NHL goaltender with us on the Scott Rintoul Show. But you talk about Columbus, and it's not just that goaltending and that style. It's the fact that they get some of those healthy, big-name bodies back. The Rangers are a real curious one to me, and I wondered if you'd bring them up because they were hot down the stretch. We know about the high-end talent, and we also know what type of lockdown goaltending they have, and yet they've got a decision to make. How would you handle that goaltending decision heading into this with the Carolina Hurricanes?
It's a good problem to have for David Quinn. To me, I would go with Igor Shesterkin. I've seen enough to know that it's his time now. And he's, I think the one thing that you got to keep in mind about Shesterkin that is, to me, a clear advantage over Henrik Lundqvist is that he can move the puck. He's a terrific puck handler, and that's going to come in handy against the Carolina Hurricanes. The Hurricanes are a team that plays fast. They get on the forecheck. They really like to play aggressively that way and keep you hemmed in. If you can find a way to beat that forecheck, you got a chance. And I think with the Rangers, guys like Adam Fox and Tony D'Angelo and Ryan Lindgren, like these guys, they're much more mobile and better at getting that puck going into the neutral zone and spending less time in their own zone because they have that ability and that skill set. But then when you have a goaltender, they can help you out with that as well. That's why I think Shesterkin has to be the guy. But I will say this. Henrik Lundqvist has handled this situation like a true pro. And if, and I'm making assumptions here that it's going to be Shesterkin, but if they have to go to Lundqvist, he will be ready. This guy's a competitive guy. He is not going to go down. He's not going to go down without a fight. He's got a legacy on the line. He's a proud person. And I know that if the New York Rangers have to go tap him on the shoulder, that he will go out there and do a job for David Quinn and the New York Rangers. So like I said, it's a good problem to have. But if you're going to ask me, I would go with the youngster Shesterkin, the talent, the puck handling, the poise. I think he gives them the best chance to win.
Well, and that's interesting, and I agree with you. I think that's the way they will lean because that decision also aligns with where they appear to be in their building process. If they do something this year, it's gravy, but we all know where the Rangers' trajectory was supposed to be, and it was not supposed to be to win as early as this, and he is the goaltender of the future there. Other situations that are of interest when it comes to choosing goaltenders don't always have that alignment, and Calgary is one in particular, Brian, because David Rittich might be the goaltender of the future, but he might not be the best guy right now, and we all know that changes feel imminent unless Calgary does something in this year's run. How does Jeff Ward deal with that competing alignment, if you will, about what's best for the franchise moving forward and just trying to get this group to do something today?
Yeah, it's a fine balance, right? Because you always have your eye down the road as an organization, but as a coach and as players, that's not always where your focus is. When you're inside that locker room, you want to win right here, right now. And in a unique situation like this, in a tournament where it's awfully difficult to handicap, you've got to be able to seize the moment. And if the guy that gives you the best chance to win, even though if it's not what's best for the future, I think you got to be prudent and act what's right now, because there are some guys in that locker room that underperformed last year in the postseason that need to have a different experience this year. It matters now. It doesn't matter a year or two down the road. And look, David Rittich at times to me showed that he has the makings to be a quality NHL goaltender. There are things that he does in his game that kind of, make me a little concerned. I think he at times he tends to be a little bit too emotional. I think that's something that can get the best of you at times. So maybe he's got to grow into that. He's got to learn. He's got to get the experiences. I think you got to do what's right for the team right now. And if you can find a way to, like I talked about earlier, you gain confidence and ride momentum, that experience will help guys going forward too. So I don't know what Jeff Ward's going to do, but if he goes with Cam Talbot, this is a guy that I think he should have a huge chip on his shoulder with regards to wanting to get his career back on track. And and if it helps the Calgary Flames in the short term, I think that's all Calgary Flames fans will care about.
As you mentioned with Henrik Lundqvist, he's been the consummate pro, and if you have a healthy goaltending stable, everybody wants to play, but you'll be at the ready. You'll be supportive of your teammate. What's the healthiest goaltending situation that you ever found yourself in during your career, and what made it that way?
I was in a lot of different ones. I think early on in my career, I wanted to play, and you're so competitive, and you want the net, and that's the most difficult thing about when you get to the National Hockey League level, you get guys that just. There's only one net, one guy can play, right? But I think when you have a situation where, sometimes you have an older guy, a veteran that's been around the league for some time, and accepts his role, understands his role, but yet allows the number one guy to be that guy, but is always ready. I think those are always the best situations. When you have two young guys battling it out, I think it can be, it might be a good decision for the coaching staff to have, but I think it's always the most, it can be not volatile, but there can be some friction there. You know, you got to make sure these two guys are able to be pros about it. But I think, like, it's big of situations where Anton Hudobin and Ben Bishop, you know what I mean? A guy clearly defined roles, but like Hudobin come in at the drop of a hat and play and give you a quality start. Yaroslav Halak with Tuukka Rask. I mean, that to me is a perfect scenario, you know? And, you know, a guy like Cam Talbot, who's, you know, getting a little bit older, I think, I don't know if he's a number one anymore. I don't think he's a number one anymore, but he certainly could, you know, fit in a role where he's like an Anton Hudobin, has experience, can win you hockey games, be like a Yaroslav Halak, and extend his career. You know, you've got to be able to park your ego at the door, understand that maybe you are that 1B option. And if you can do that, I always found that when I got to that point in my career and I accepted my role and was less about trying to, you know, want to be a number one, that's when I started to play better hockey. And I only started to realize that I spent a short time in Calgary, and I realized quickly that I was nowhere near the caliber of a Mika Kiprusoff. Even though, like, we grew up coming up in the American League at the same time, we played World Juniors against one another, I would have fancied myself as a goaltender that probably in junior was better than him. He turned out to be the better pro. And when I saw how he approached, that's when I started to get like a wake-up call and realize, if I want to stay in the league, I better accept my role and be a guy that's going to be a good team guy and be able to come off the bench and give quality starts. That's how you can extend your career as a goaltender.
Well, and you talk about that evolution, and hey, maybe you weren't that great at one point, or maybe things got derailed, but for some guys, it happens later. And Vancouver has a very good example of that in Jacob Markstrom, a guy who needed to deconstruct his game and has put in the work and has really ascended to a level over the last year and a half that many wondered if he'd ever get to in the National Hockey League. What's your 30,000-foot view on not only Markstrom going into the most highly pressure-packed games he has faced in his NHL career, but also on the Vancouver Canucks with a relatively young team heading in?
I think the future is bright for the Canucks. There's no doubt about that. I mean, when you got a guy like Pettersson and Hughes, and you know your future is bright there. When I look at Markstrom, I agree with you. It took a little longer than I think a lot of people would have expected. When I see him, I just see a guy that's got good athleticism, good size. I think, you know, everybody falls in love with the Swedish goaltenders because of Henrik Lundqvist, and you say, oh, you know, maybe he could be the next Lundqvist. Maybe there's pressure with that for these young goalies when you have a star goaltender from your country and the comparisons are made. But, you know, the one thing I know about goaltending is that everybody matures at their own pace, and it can be what's between the ears that, you know, stops a guy from being great, or, you know, sometimes it just takes a little longer to develop that skill. And the one thing I will say is that he is, he's in a good situation as far as like being in Vancouver. They were a team that, you know, kind of grew together. I think initially, from my point of view, the expectations were low, yet they came up together and grew confidence. I think the future is bright in Vancouver. It's a big playoff for Markstrom in the sense that, you know, he's got a contract to sign and his future is going to be stamped on this. But I think he's a top 10 number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. I'd feel very comfortable if I was a team that needed a number one guy and we had the budget to go get him. I'd make a run at him. I mean, I feel like he would be a guy that could solidify your goaltending for the next 4 or 5 years. That's how I see him. It took a little longer, but sometimes it takes longer for different guys.
It's taken longer for things to work out in Arizona, and I wanted to finish there. I know there's not a lot of high expectations for the Coyotes externally this year, but we all saw this situation devolve between John Chyka and ownership over the course of last weekend, and people really wondering where the Coyotes are at. Now, you played in that market, and most people I've talked to who have either spent time there or played there, they really think it can work eventually. What is your view on that situation overall and the future of the Coyotes franchise?
Oh man, you know, it's a great place to live. I always felt like if there's ever a place that needs to have a winner, it's there. I guess Florida could be another one too. The thing about, you know, Phoenix is that there's so many people that are fans of hockey there, but they're fans of the Chicago Blackhawks or Detroit Red Wings or New York Rangers because they're all from those areas, or, you know, Calgary, and they move to Phoenix and they're snowbirds that go down there. So there are hockey fans there. I think the key there is that they have to win. They have to generate a buzz about the Arizona Coyotes in order to capture the fan base there. I also think something that hurts their organization is the location of the arena. It's a little bit of a ways away from Scottsdale, where, you know, majority of the population is. And so it can be challenging to, you know, to fill the seats there, especially when you have an extended homestand. But, you know, look, when you have a guy like Austin Matthews come out of, you know, the Scottsdale area, you know that, the, you know, that hockey, youth hockey is growing there. There's a bunch of kids that have played youth hockey there that are playing in the Western Hockey League now and kids going into the college ranks. So the popularity of the sport is there. But if they want to have Arizona Coyote fans, that team is going to need to be successful and start winning. And if they can do that, you know, and potentially maybe get themselves in a new area for a new building, I think that would be the biggest asset for them. And then they could really capture those fans. But it's a great place to live. I mean, if you're a free agent, you want to sign, you want to, you know, live in the sun and not be in the cold, it's a great place. I think just unfortunately, they haven't had the opportunity to have very many successful teams, and I think that's what's kind of you know stunted their growth.
Yeah, vitamin D, that's certainly part of the pitch Steve Sullivan will be giving Taylor Hall if they can get him re-signed there. Excellent stuff, Brian. Really enjoyed this conversation and looking forward to seeing your work in this tournament unfold over the course of this opening weekend. Thank you very much.
You bet, Scott. Great to be with you.